This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For daily content, follow Bartholomew Town on Instagram and TikTok. As Rhode Island's first ever member-owned credit union, Navigant Credit Union has been a staple in the local business community for more than 108 years. Today, Navigant is a $3.4 billion institution serving more than 136,000 members across 25 physical branch locations. But since its founding in 1915, the mission has never changed. Navigant Credit Union's team of financial professionals have remained committed to improving the financial well-being of the families, businesses, and communities they serve across Rhode Island. Learn more at NavigantCU.org.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.
Anybody who's listened to this podcast for a while probably has heard me talk about one of my favorite things to do in Rhode Island and beyond, which is to explore the great outdoors, of which we have plenty here to explore in the Ocean State. I grew up in South County, and one of my favorite things to do is just get out of Providence as often as I can on the weekends and just check out the variety of trails. I've been raving about the South Kingstown Land Trust Duval Trail System over the last couple of weeks, and a new discovery. It's a great passion. It's also great because it's an economically affordable hobby to have. And a big piece of that, of course, is the birds that call Rhode Island home, at least for part of the season. It's migration season. And what a great chance to speak with Lauren Parmalee, the Audubon Society's Senior Director of Education. Lauren, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
My pleasure. So there's so much we could talk about, of course, and I definitely want to touch on some of the programs that the Audubon Society offers. It's kind of a household name, the Audubon Society, but I guess just give us the elevator pitch on what it is you do.
Audubon Society of Rhode Island is focused on Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We conserve land, so we conserve almost 10,000 acres of land. We have 14 wildlife refuges open to the public for hiking. We also have a broad education program. We're in schools, we're in parks, we have a nature center in Bristol. We do programming for people of all ages. And we're also in the State House advocating for sound environmental laws. So we do a lot with a little, and we're all very passionate about nature.
I was out on the Trustum Pond Wildlife Refuge about a month ago, and I saw what I think was an Audubon Society birding tour. Does that seem right?
Yeah, definitely. Trustum's one of the best places in the state to go birding. We have weekly bird walks on Wednesdays, and you could have run into one of those groups or a weekend group.
You know, the species of birds that call Rhode Island home, I mean, we think of the big ticket items. Everyone loves the snowy owl that shows up in Middletown every year, the ospreys and whatnot. But I guess, you know, just in sum, what are some of the migrating birds that are arriving? When should we expect them? And where do you look for them? And of course, one of my favorite parts of it is listen to their beautiful songs.
Right. So migration's been underway for just about a month. Starts out with those red-winged blackbirds that come back from the south. They only go as far as they have to, so they could have spent the winter in New Jersey. But if they come back soon, so you'll see them in the marshes, the wetlands along farm edges, and flashing those red patches on their wings and singing their song. So they're the early reminders of spring. And then as we go, the osprey have just shown up this week. So as you said, the osprey are just coming back. I think we've had a few reports, but I think next week everybody's going to be watching those osprey carrying fish around. One bird that people might not know is the American oyster catcher, which is a shore bird with a bright red beak. And those show up usually on Rose Island first thing. And my friend Captain Eric on the Save the Bay Seal boat always texts me and says, the oyster catchers are back. And so if you're a person who lives up.
That may be them right there giving you a call. We have arrived.
Sorry about that.
Oh, it's all good.
So if you're a person who's out on a boat, you might look for those along rocky shores. And they're so beautiful. They're really unmistakable because they're so big. And then as things move along, you might have an eastern phoebe in your yard. The phoebe is a little flycatcher. And I always know a phoebe because it wags its tail. So it's a little brown bird with a creamy chest. But the distinguishing feature is that little wag of the tail. And they like brown people. Yeah.
It's such a great sign of spring. And I mean, there are some winter people, but for the most part, I think, you know, it's human nature. You just get excited about spring and it's, here we are. It's a great time of year. I mean, it's a little chilly right now, whatever, but we're heading in that direction. You know, I know it's kind of a fantasy because it's probably different birds, like actual physical birds, but there's a great osprey nest off of Hazard Road in Newport.
Oh, yes.
One of my favorite things to do is just go down there, and I always visit. You know, I'm always like, all right, we're back. You know, like, it's like, I feel like I have this years long relationship with this family of birds. And again, I know it's probably not the exact same bird year to year.
It could be. Osprey, once they've been successful in a nest location, they will come back to the same nest every year. And that nest in particular, that's Audubon's one piece of property in Newport, is that marsh with that osprey pole.
Well, how do you like that? That's one of my favorite places in the world. You know, if I was going to. I always say if somehow, you know, let's say the Roger Williams Park Zoo knocked on the door and they said, we're capturing you, we're going to put you in, you know, put you on in an exhibit and we'll make the placard and we'll have merchandise representing you. Make my habitat either Hazard Road down there, that sort of marshy area, or, you know, you could go ahead and make it like Matunic, Perryville. Just make sure my habitat feels like that. And we can sort of agree that you can put me on display.
I love that area too. I live in Newport, and that's one of my favorite places to park at Ballard Park, just up the road, and then walk that marsh. That's a beautiful marsh. And right now, you'll see in that marsh and other places that we still have some of our wintering ducks, like the bufflehead and common golden eye, and they're still hanging out before they leave for their nesting grounds. And so, if you come across some ducks, take a look at them because they're all flirty and they're all showing throwing their heads back and singing their songs. They're really funny right now. And then those ducks will migrate north as our southern species come in.
You know, I love owls. And something that is shocking to me is I don't think I've ever seen an owl in Rhode Island. And it's something that I, you know, when I'm out on walks, I'm always like, all right, I think I hear them, especially as you start to get late. Mm-hmm. Where would you recommend for those owl aficionados? can we find them?
Yeah, the best way to find an owl really is to listen. So let's say I can tell you there are several great horned owls that live right around Newport. So let's say you're walking down Bellevue Avenue and it's nighttime and you hear the hoot of an owl. Because the great horned is the hoot owl, then you just follow the sound without trespassing, and you may come across them. If you have a flashlight, you can put it up where you hear the sound. We also have little screech owls that make it's more like a whinny noise. And again, they like to nest in inside trees. And again, it's about following the sound.
The Audubon Society offers 30 free May birding walks. Basically, every day of the month, they're led by birding experts at locations across the state. They're free, but they're very popular, so there's an encouragement to register in advance. Talk about the month of May and what's coming up.
Yeah, the month of May is birders' heaven because this is really when the big push of spring migrants come, like the warblers, orioles, tanagers, grosbeaks. And so that's when really a lot of the very colorful males and the more camouflaged females are all moving up from the subtropics. And so it's a very exciting time. So we like to offer people the chance you know, to get out and see those birds. You don't have to be a bird. You can be a very beginning birder and come along on a bird walk. We're just there to introduce you to the wonders of the birds. And those take place at a whole variety of refuges around the state. including there'll be a couple at Rucker, which is in Tiverton. I'll be doing Tuesday morning walks in Bristol at the Nature Center. And we have refuges around the state. So those are, that's a great way to get out and see birds that, what you're trying to do is catch them before the leaves all come out, right? Because even though they're very colorful, they really blend in with the bright green leaves. So we try to get out the beginning of May and all the way through and just enjoy those gorgeous birds.
The Audubon Society maintains a nature center and aquarium in Bristol. And something that caught my eye is that you're now hosting sensory-friendly hours twice a month. That means fewer guests, a quieter environment. And look, anybody who themselves experiences anything in the autism spectrum disorder range or someone in their family, someone that's close to them, knows just how important sensory overload management really is. And as beautiful and peaceful as nature can be, and as beautiful and peaceful as studying nature can be in an environment like the Nature Center and Aquarium, I think it's important for, and it's a great initiative to offer this program. When can folks who are interested in those sensory friendly hours find them? And I guess which days and what's the best way to learn more about that?
Right. Yeah. They're being offered on one Sunday morning and one Tuesday afternoon a month. And that you can find all of our events on our website, www.asri.org, and then click on the events calendar at the top of the page. And we're asking people to keep the numbers low. So it's a calm environment is just to register for those sensory hours. And they've been popular. I think it's a real need. We're trying to figure out, like a lot of organizations, we're trying to figure out how to be as accessible as possible. And so we're really have an initiative now working with people who have special needs, whether those be children in a classroom or youth that are moving out of high school into the adult world, or even adults with special needs. We're really focused on that.
You also offer a family fun day, which is free. It's the first Saturday of each month. Craft stories, hikes, special programs, and something that caught my eye. Boy, I'd like to get in on this one. Animal interviews. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so the Audubon has a series of a variety of animal ambassadors. So when I say that word, these are animals that help people understand the beauty and the adaptations of wildlife. We have a variety of turtles, including we have a couple on exhibit, Darwin the diamondback terrapin. And we bring those animals out in a calm setting, and people can look at them up close and learn more about where they live and how they survive in the wild. So we have turtles and snakes and owls and hawks and and people just love that. So we do that twice a day on those free family fun days. And free family fun days are a great way, like, to enjoy the Nature Center. If you've never been, you have a big family, it's a nice way to bring everybody at no cost. So I encourage people to come enjoy the, not just the indoor Nature Center exhibits, but we have a pollinator garden that's really going to be beautiful by May, June, July. And then we have a short hiking trail that goes through a whole variety of habitats and hooks up to the bike trail. So if you want to take a longer walk, you can do that.
Really special. As I mentioned, I grew up in South County in the woods. I did have my sister around, but for the most part, some of my best friends growing up were the wild turkeys and certainly a lot of turtles, things like that. It really led me into a mindset. I'm vegan. I've been vegetarian for well over 25 years. I was perceived as a complete maniac when I was in middle school and not, you know, I was harassed constantly about this, made fun of. It was really a source of contention, probably drove me to continue that process. But I'm a huge animal lover. I feel like as an artist, my relationship with nature and with wild animals and with plants, because we don't know if a carrot or a tree feels something that we can't understand. Perhaps they're more advanced than we are in terms of their ability to digest and give back to the world around us. How did you get into this work? And what's your message to someone out there who is, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's because they didn't have the opportunity so far in their life, or maybe they've just been averse to, I don't want to be out around mosquitoes or something, whatever it is. What's your message from your own lived experience of how you got into this world, made it a career out of it, and your encouragement to folks who don't spend much time in nature and what they can learn besides just the sort of exercise of it?
Right. Well, like you, I grew up in Eastern Connecticut in the woods, and my parents, what we did on Saturdays and Sundays was we went out hiking, we went canoeing, we were outdoors all the time. And so I think I just, from an early age, I just loved being outside, whether we were at the ocean or in the mountains. And so I think I knew from when I was young that I wanted to study science. I wanted to study biology. And then you just sort of, I got into this bringing other people outside and becoming an educator. And I think that's really my passion when I teach beginning birding. I love teaching new folks because birds can hook people into going outside more. So I really encourage people, take your kids outside. Take your kids outside to whatever green spaces you have near you, whether that be a little pocket park or Roger Williams Park or any of the number of land trust properties or U.S. Fish and Wildlife refuges. Get outside. It's good for you. It gets you off your phone. And it can be really, there are many documented benefits to being outside, especially for kids who have a lot of energy or have trouble focusing or have behavior issues. Being outside is, you see marked improvement in these kids. So I just encourage people, do what you feel comfortable doing and then expand.
I love that, because there is a physical exercise, obviously, benefit, but there's also an undertaking. And trails are pretty well marked in a lot of the systems in the state in terms of beginner, intermediate, advanced. One of the things to watch for besides just simply the length of the trail is the topography. And if it's particularly hilly, that can be a bit more challenging. But there's really something for everyone. That's a message that I think is really important. Even if you only want to spend 5 minutes a day, it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. The trail here in Bristol is only a mile out and back, and you go through 4 habitats. So you can have the chance to see those wild turkeys or the turtles in the freshwater wetland or the osprey down at the shore. So I definitely encourage people, you know, and if you're not a walker, find a bench.
Absolutely. Right. Exactly. It's not just about the physical piece. You know, one last thing, it's a little bit of a sidebar, but I have just been conflicted. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but the trapping of wild birds. One time I was in Brazil. I've been there several times, but I was in Brazil in 2019. I was in this really beautiful, super remote spot in this waterfall environment. I mean, just totally off the grid, with my partner who's from there. And all of a sudden I looked up, and like something out of a sci-fi movie or what you'd see in a stealth formation of military aircraft, I look up, and a flock of golden macaws flew above me in the wild. And it actually took my breath away. It actually caused me to just kind of change my life, this moment. And people who have wild birds as pets, sometimes there are scenarios where I suppose you can make an argument that it works. Too often these animals, people realize, I can't take care of them. They're abandoned. There's a wonderful parrot sanctuary in Hopkinton that unfortunately suffered a fire. But anyone who's interested, I did a story on them for PBS, that you just see these beautiful animals. But your take from the standpoint of not only birds, but people who capture turtles or any other wild animal and bring them inside.
Right.
There's a benefit to it because of, you know, the exposure and that you'd have to that animal, but it is far outweighed by the damage, I would imagine.
Absolutely. First of all, it's illegal to bring any wildlife into your home. Unfortunately, the turtle issue is a big one in this state and other places, that this time of year people find turtles crossing the road and think that, oh, this is a beautiful animal and I'll bring it home, having no idea what they eat, what they need, never mind that they need to be in the wild. The other thing about it is if you find a turtle, please just move it in the direction it's going. Don't move it somewhere else. It's really important to keep the animals in their own place. It's not only illegal, it's cruel to bring in these animals out of the wild because you just don't know how to make their life better than they had in the wild. They need to be free. The other thing is, people, even if you buy birds that are legally traded or turtles that are legally traded, these animals live a long time. A box turtle can live 60 to 70 years. A macaw can live 60 to 70 years. You are responsible for that animal for the rest of your life and maybe the next generation's life. And that's why there are organizations like the Foster Parrot organization, because people found out that they can't take care of these animals and they have a lot of needs, and they're very intelligent parrots. And so they have even more needs than, you know, your average chickadee, because they live so long and they're so smart.
Mm. Just the thought of separating a beautiful bird from its family, from its natural habitat, it will, make you question what kind of society we actually have. And yeah, it's somewhat glamorized, and we see it on Instagram and TikTok way too much, this sort of culture of almost using animals for clicks. And it's horrible. It almost reminds me of like early 1900s carnivals or something like that. It's just so demented. But yeah. Hey, I could talk to you forever. I'd love to do this again.
Anytime.
Amazing organization, amazing work. There are a lot of pitches for people to make donations from all kinds of organizations. And I got to tell you that anything that anybody can give, time, resources, land to the Audubon Society of Rhode Island, please do it. We're in a housing crisis. We need to develop more housing. We also need to preserve our open space. ASRI.org for information on all the programs, trail maps, visiting the Nature Center, news happenings, articles, advocacy. Lauren Parmalee, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Bartholomew Town is brought to you in part by the University of Rhode Island Online, who offer a wide array of programs. Learn more at uri.edu/online or give them a call at 401-874-5280. That's 401-874-5280. Half Street Group brings a new generation's perspective to leadership communications, strategic public relations, and digital marketing. Half Street helps organizations and leaders take control of their own stories and manage their reputations. They get results for their clients by focusing on audience, message, and culture, and by leveraging their decade-long relationship with media and opinion leaders in the Ocean State and throughout New England. Join me and Half Street Group founder and president Mike Rea for a conversation every month about news of the day, the hottest media analysis, and a look behind the scenes at how impactful leaders drive conversations. Learn more at halfstreetgroup.com.